Welcome to the little red barn, where we're bouncing off the walls like a squirrel on meth with coffee to spare. We're racing through farm talk with energy to share. From tractors to livestock, we jump topic to topic, faster than a combine at harvest time. So buckle up, friends, and hold on tight. The Little Red Barn Podcast starts now.
That's right. The next episode of the Little Red Barn Podcast starts right now, and we've got the studio packed full again this week. With me, as always, my main man, Charlie Huyen, alongside in the co-host chair. And Charlie brought somebody again. We've got Smiley over here in the corner.
Giggles.
Hey, Matthew. How are you? You doing good? I offered him jelly beans, Charlie, and did he take them?
Absolutely no.
Do you not like jelly beans, Matthew?
He's kind of particular on what he eats.
I never ran it. You know, hey, Charlie, do you know what president, what U.S. president had the favorite treat, had it on his desk of jelly beans? What president was it?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. My God, you've taught him well, Charlie.
Absolutely.
He knows his U.S. presidents.
We got a good young conservative here.
So, and we're not talking about our guest in the studio.
No, we're not talking about him. But
speaking of presidential trivia, what was the favorite drink of President John Tyler? Anybody know? I've been told it was all of them.
All of them?
So, yeah, apparently a depressed guy. So, anyway, that's neither here nor there. That was one of the jokes another kid about Matthew's age told me a couple weeks ago. So, Charlie, how's things going?
Well, we got about 400 acres to go.
Yeah.
We got also a foot of snow over that corn plant.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
We feel pretty confident that it's being preserved good.
Good, good. We'll talk more about where your machines are at and how your prospects look on that in our little weather segment a little bit later. But
they're a little frosty right now.
A little frosty. That a little more to dry out, I guess, if you will.
Right.
But we've also got here in the studio my good friend Mike Thompson joining us from just down the road, Wabash County. Mike, good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to be here, guys. Actually, Huntington County. I work in Wabash.
Oh, that's right. I went down the wrong road.
You're pretty close. Yeah.
It all blends together. Mike is a DSM, District Sales Manager in the acronym world, DSM for Dairyland Seed. And so we want to talk with Mike here a little bit this time around about how the crop year ended up. You saw a lot of stuff over a lot of different places. We're going to talk about that a little bit. And also some big news from Mike here over the past 2 weeks. Mike is throwing his hat in the ring in the District 17 Indiana Senate race. And so we're going to talk, why the hell would you do that? So we'll get to that here in a little bit. But Mike, good to have you here. Bring us up to speed, first of all. How did the year wind down for Dairyland? You had plots out in a lot of different places. Were you pleased? Were you unpleased? Surprised? Not surprised? How did it go without trying to lay on the big sales pitch?
Absolutely. So, yeah, as a semi-professional seed corn salesman, I could say the Dairyland seed products were phenomenal in most places. As you guys know, North Central Indiana, we were dry.
Yeah.
Just about, you know, we had a good planting, and then after that, got cold and wet. July was about the last time we got a big shot of water, and August was very dry. So at our Wabash field days, about August 20, 21st, Ryan, you actually joined us at our field days.
Mm-hmm.
And the outlook, everyone was pretty nervous, you know. Commodity prices were pretty soft. Stuff was starting to burn up. No one had mowed their lawn for a while. And we were filling pods, and we're putting good ears on, and we were real nervous. But I tell you what, some places got a few inches of water, some a little less. But when the combine started rolling, for the most part, guys were tickled. Soybeans, some guys actually had best years ever. Some were a little soft. Same with corn. Kind of from Wabash north. Seemed to be about the sweetest spot. You know, guys were hitting 70, 80 bushel beans, 250 bushel corn. Some guys actually, I broke a record by Mentone. We had a plot where one of the products went 325 bushel. So on around here, that's very impressive. We've got some decent dirt, but it's not Iowa and Illinois. Mm-hmm. You can find some spots by Fort Wayne where things were pretty tough. But mm-hmm. overall, it's very impressive what everyone's genetics are doing. Not just our own, but, you know, as in general, guys were pretty happy. I think 15 years ago, you know, if we had a year like this, it would have been a much different story.
So that's one of the things that I've kind of noticed in the genetics ball game. And Charlie and I trade barbs over this seed variety, that seed variety all the time. But if you go back to 2012, one of the things that came out of that 2012 drought season was a need in, well, a push on the genetic side to make it so that this doesn't ever happen again. By this not having to get the yield knock that we saw from a lack of water. And, you know, the capital improvements that came along as well with the high prices in 2012 into 2013, a lot of money coming into farmers' accounts, and that went into two things, storage or irrigation, because the farmer said, I'm not letting this happen again either. But the genetics, we've made a lot of strides here in the last 10 years, so 2014 to 2024. Where's it all come from?
I think plant breeding and technology, right? Processes. It's the speed at which the machines, whether it doesn't matter whether it's Corteva's camp, Bayer's camp, whoever, the speed of this flywheel is just it's speeding up faster and faster and faster. Back in the day, if you had a hybrid that you really liked, you know, it might be in the catalog for 5, 10, sometimes 10 plus years anymore. If something's you planted it 1 year, you really like it, you get it the next year, and then hey, after that, it's kind of like we're moving on to the new thing. So there's some growing pains with that. You know, I like to say we date our varieties, we don't marry them because it's moving pretty fast. Every now and then, you'll have something sticks around for you know 5 years, 4 or 5 years, but I think it's a good thing. If we were planting the same things we were 10, 15 years ago, we'd really be in a pickle. You know, we wouldn't have the drought tolerance and stuff like that we have today. So bushels are up for most people, but then that's going to lead you to some weaker commodity mm-hmm. prices. But luckily there were some trade deals done and some more potential trade deals. So that's helped everybody out a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not sure where those are going to stay. Charlie and I have talked quite a bit about that. I mean, well, just look this past week. Look at this past week. The week of Thanksgiving, all of the rumor was another 12, 15 cargoes to China traded. Well, over the course of this past week, we were able to confirm 5 or 6 of them. So where are the other 8 to 10?
Exactly. Where are these? And with the business days that are left in the year that they were supposed to accomplish this, are dwindling.
Now, well, they're not going to accomplish it. That's the problem.
They're going to have to buy some major bushels every day and the infrastructure's just not there. And you look at, even if they were to buy the number of boatloads of corn
or beans or whatever
the product is, they're going to take delivery right in the time frame that they're going to start taking delivery of the soybeans coming from Brazil.
We are less than 40 days away from early harvest in Brazil. That center north in Brazil, the combines will be in the field less than 40 days from now.
Oh, absolutely.
It starts. So,
and then it starts the whole process over again. It seems like the U.S. market just got, we'll buy them, but it's going to be next August.
Yeah. So my gut goes back to you. You mentioned the flywheel on this plant breeding and selection and all that. Are we going to see companies like Dairyland, like Bex, like Pioneer, throw whoever you want in there, stop or not to say stop, but pull back from bushels and start to look at something else? We haven't had a fancy soybean come out since this whole high oleic crap started, the plenish stuff. And we kind of beat that horse pretty big. Mike, are you seeing anything else where you are in the cog of the wheel here that we're looking at either beans or corn or something that would say, well, bushels are important, but maybe we should point toward this?
That's actually a great question. I think bushels are always going to be important, and I think they're going to continue to keep trying to inch that along forward. But there's two things that come straight to mind, especially with corn. The big talk the last few years has been short or reduced statured corn.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're trying to accomplish there is not so much let's get extra bushels, but it's how do we manage this corn? Because we've got 300 bushel corn. It gets 12 feet tall. Out west, we got a derecho. Next thing you know, thousands and thousands, tens of, if not hundreds of thousands of acres get wiped out. So reduced statured corn, it's easier to manage.
Okay.
So you can get across it with your Hagee, your sprayer, put your fungicide on. You don't need to hire a drone or airplane, so guys can manage that better. And then it just stands a lot better in a major wind event. The other thing is Corteva is working on a multi-disease resistant hybrid portfolio that we're hoping to launch somewhere in, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, something like that. And that's going to give you a lot of disease, just trade up resistance or tolerance that like right now we're struggling with. Yield is still going to be critical, but it's like, how can we make this thing easier to manage from a farmer? And how can we make this tougher, you know, against the pests? Because the reality is we're growing a lot of corn and there's a lot of diseases, a lot of insects out there. We're building up pressure. So we got to be able to play, you know, add some layers of armor to that.
So you've deal with a lot of livestock guys, right?
Not as much as back in the day, but yeah, there's definitely quite a few.
So the main complaint that we're hearing, well, and they may not complain very loud because a lot of livestock guys are also row crop guys. It's that diversification. Who was it that told us we needed to diversify every other
Dave
word?
Did.
Yeah, Dave was telling us we needed to diversify. Good old Dave. But a lot of these guys have done that. But when they go to buy their feed, you know, 10 years ago, the average or the industry standard for soybean meal was 48.5% protein. It went to 48. It went to 47. 47.5. 46. 46.5. Now we're struggling to get 46 to 46.5. And Mike, why are we doing that? It's because the bean protein has dropped. When we breed for bushels, we lose other parts of that bean. And the same can be said for corn. You know, you lose. What will it take? And I know the answer is dollar signs, but outside of that, what will it take for the industry to pivot and say, hey, we need to find something that will help our friends in the livestock sector with protein and things like that, and maybe look at it like a high oleic bean, but in a high protein bean so that we can augment our protein sources that way?
Yeah, it's a good question. So it's the bearing on the combine that's squeaking probably gets the grease, right? So as soon as there's a big enough demand for that, you're going to have someone that says, hey, these growers or these industries are looking for a product that has higher protein. And so we can start breeding for that. And then they can, you know, have a premium for a product. But until that demand reaches critical mass, you're probably not going to see a whole lot of investment into it.
That's sad. That's sad, Charlie, don't you think?
Yeah.
Captain 300 bushel corn over there.
Hey, what can we say?
If you're growing 100 more bushels of corn than we were 10 years ago, then there's plenty of protein out there.
Well, that's valid. You just shove more down their throats. So, yeah.
I'm curious, though, is there going to be more development of seed that are specialized? Because when I was an intern for Asgrow, we talked about it a little bit back then, going like, well, we thought the market was going to go for, in the seed industry, was going to go, okay, there's going to be a certain corn hybrid for ethanol, a certain corn hybrid for animal production where we're going to have good quality feed. There's going to be a certain soybean for plastics. There's going to be a certain soybean for crayons or even a certain soybean for biodiesel. So are we still going to see that come true? But that was almost 25 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, we're all humans and we like simple and we're kind of lazy. So if we can make something work without really have to reinvent the wheel, I imagine that's the route they're going to go.
Interesting. It's all interesting to me, just where, especially with the consolidation that we've seen in this seed business. It used to be we had all sorts of regional, and Mike, Dairyland is still considered a regional seed company, and I'm using bunny ears, but we're talking even hyper-local, you know, back in the days of Roman Haas, right in this
area.
Crows. Heinold, I guess that was feed, but you know, everything was hyper local, and those slowly but surely got gobbled up. On some hands, that's helped, Mike, right? It's kind of gotten all of that knowledge concentrated to be able to turn the wheel faster, but in some ways, it's kind of hurt too, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I always think competition is good, right? You have all these businesses out there trying to get your business, and ag retail is a perfect example of that. Every county used to have a co-op. There used to be these mom-and-pop retailer locations. And now, through consolidation, we've got – there might be a Helena 30 miles up the road. There's probably a Nutrien. There might be a co-op. So you've really got maybe three, maybe four retail locations within, you know, a decent distance to your farm. And whenever you have fewer people that are trying to earn your business, that's not good as a farmer, right? The more people you have knocking on your door, I'm a young guy. I'm out cold calling. I'm driving up driveways and introducing myself to folks. And the amount of times I go and knock on a guy's door, go up to a shop and hop in there, and he says, you know, you're the first person to cold call on me in 10 years or 20 years. Mm-hmm. It just blows my mind because you think about it. There's not that many guys rolling around in pickup trucks out there looking for business. You know, now it's more of they sit in the office and they wait for the farmer to come to them just because there's not that, you know, we have fewer farmers, we have fewer retail locations. Yeah. And then we have fewer ag companies. So the advantage is Corteva is being one of the world's largest ag companies, and we have a lot of great products, right? And Bayer would be our biggest competitor.
Sure.
But then, you know, there used to be Dow, DuPont, Monsanto. And so
he said a dirty word.
Oh, that's right. Monsatan, I apologize.
No, you're exactly right. And honestly, you mentioned the co-op. I feel that in agriculture today, it would behoove farmers to start working back toward that model. I envision here in the years to come, as it becomes, as margins become tighter and tighter, because guys like you and Dairyland and guys like Helen, all that, product inputs aren't getting any cheaper. Mike, when's the last time that we had a cut in corn or soybean seed prices?
It's been a while.
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
It's been a minute. So the margins are getting slimmer. The inputs are going up. I feel that the American farmer, the Indiana farmer, the northern Indiana farmer is going to have to start looking back at that co-op model, which means guys have to learn to get along and not care so much about you got to get along with your neighbor.
Charlie came in here with boxing gloves. You're saying we're supposed to get along?
Yeah.
What's that?
Well, but
now,
I think we have to go that way.
I disagree with you.
You do?
I do. I disagree with you. I think we got to work smarter than harder. I think that now when I went out and looked at and purchased our chemistries, the first place I go is online. I'm going online. I'm using Farmers Business Network. I'm reaching out.
You just said a dirty word.
I'm reaching out over the internet, looking at different opportunities to buy, because my competitors are gone for my local co-op. We have one co-op in the county.
Well, that's why you need more.
And
I'm saying band together and make one.
And every time they have merged, they have increased their prices. Uh-oh, now I'm really going to get in trouble.
They got nice newer spreaders, nicer trucks, and the prices went way up, right?
Boy, that was a nice brand-new sprayer that they have, though.
That's your
and you want
right?
You want them to be profitable,
right?
But you don't want to be taken advantage of. There's a difference there. Yeah.
They don't need to go to Hawaii for vacation. I don't mind a cruise, but come on.
Yeah.
But to get competitive with my pricing for what my needs are on my farm, I have to go online. I need to go to these online sources, almost like a catalog, and pick out what's best for me. Now, that works good for me. And I've talked to other producers that are our size and say, hey, we absolutely have to have our co-op because it not only provides us with our chemistry, but the insights on how to use the chemistry. Mm-hmm. Where I'm not looking for that insight, other people are still looking for that insight, for that edge to work with the know-how at these co-ops that are still there. But for me, I'm just going pricing. I'm going like, man, I need that price. I need that margin.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're doing is it's going to grow in popularity as we get these younger farmers, right, that take ownership and management, that are good with the internet, and they you know, they understand chemistry. I'm old school, though. So, like, the last thing I want to do is to shop, you know, on Amazon and buy my herbicide or my seed. You might be able to find it cheaper, but I really enjoy the relationship that you get by working with that salesman, or, you know, whether it's co-op rep or seed rep, chemical guy. If you have a problem, you can call the number, and, you know, you already know, they know your operation, you know who you're working with. If you have a problem, they're going to take care of it. You know, one of the things I really like about living in the country and being out here in God's country is, you can look at your neighbor, you can look at the guy you're doing business with, you can shake their hand, and you pretty well know you're going to be taken care of. And obviously, every now and then something goes awry. But with the internet, that place could fold up shop. You know, there's a guy in Indianapolis selling chemicals with an ankle bracelet. So online, he sells them cheap. But sometimes you don't maybe get the quality of person that you see when you're you go to the diner, you go to a gas station, and you see the guy you're working with, and you know they're going to be around in 20 years.
Well, and the other thing I'll say is this way, I'll put it to you this way. Charlie, have you used the Kroger app or anything like that, Meijer or what have you, that you can buy your groceries online and then go pick them up? Have you done that?
I've looked at it, but I have not done it.
You haven't done it. I haven't done it on a big batch of groceries, but I do know some people that live and die by that. And the one thing that they don't like is you don't get to pick.
Substitute.
You can have trouble substituting sometimes. And if you do, it's a crapshoot of what you get.
That's right.
But do you grab the first thing? Now, again, we're men here. So when we grocery shop, it's usually men on a mission. Go down through. Well, she said she wanted green beans. Fine. And you rake them off the front.
These
right?
will work.
And these will, but have you watched your wives shop, especially when it comes to produce?
Oh, yeah.
Pick it up, look at it, put it down. Pick it up, look at it, put it. When you shop online, you get what they give you, and they're going to take off the top of the sack. And if you want to take it out of groceries and put it into lumber, when's the last time that you went to Menards or Lowe's or Home Depot and picked up the very 5 2x4s that are going to go home with you and do something with? No. I don't. I'm digging to the center of the stack before I find something that's worthwhile.
Yeah, top third or crooked.
So when you are ordering offline, you are beholden to whatever they give you, and they may give you something that has an expiration date that was either passed or is going to be passed in a month or two and some things like that. So I think that's outside of the relationship. You get what you get, and you don't throw a fit when you order that way too.
And I would agree. You got to pay attention to what you're doing, what your percentages are. You don't pick the first can of green beans.
Right.
You don't pick the first jug of Roundup that's presented to your glyphosate. You look at it, you read the labels, you figure out.
So you can actually see when you're shopping online, you can actually see the container of the product of the exact thing you're getting. You can buy it by lot number.
I read the label.
You can buy it by lot number?
You can read the label. You can look at it and go, okay, is this the right product for me?
I didn't know that. I didn't know it was that. Must be AI. Got to get Scott Strong back in here and talk about this stupid AI and showing you chemistry.
You know, AI is, you know, you got to use it when you can. I mean, ever since Scott came on, I've been going like, maybe I should be using more AI. And before you know it, I got AI on my phone reading me my text messages.
I will say, kind of funny, going back to the conversation about relationship and if there's a problem, you know, this past summer we were spraying and I called the salesman. He didn't pick up. I had a question about use rate on one of the products. Couldn't find my sheet. And so I thought, well, I'll just, you know, you go to Google it, and sometimes that can lead you down a bad path. So I just, I'll go into AI and type it in. And I'll be darned, it gave me the answer in about 5 seconds, you know. So that was pretty cool. But then you hear these horror stories of kids in class that the AI, you know, ChatGPT or whatever is writing their papers for them, and they get through several years of school, and they didn't learn anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that scares me. I mean, that's a real problem.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which,
Matthew, have you used AI in school lately?
A little, but for the right moment.
He
told me use it every day for every class.
Yeah, no kidding. What is that? just Mr. Berger's ag class, right?
Only for animal science.
I can't believe you there,
Mr. Berger. Oh boy, hope he's not listening this week.
So speaking of AI, did that, Mike, play at all into this announcement that you made a couple weeks back of being the first person to challenge an incumbent in a primary in the Senate district that you're in a while? Did you throw it at ChatGPT and say, should I do something stupid? And it said yes.
Oh, geez. That's a long story of how I got to this conclusion to run for office. I've always been very outspoken and very passionate about my beliefs, if you will. Mm-hmm. In college, I at Purdue, boiler up. I actually was president of Purdue Young Americans for Liberty. It was kind of a pro-constitutional club. We, you know, at that time, a lot of students were getting thrown out of campus if they made the wrong thing on Twitter. And put the wrong hat on or whatever. So we were very
Twitter didn't exist when I was in college at Purdue. So, you know, you're talking about some weird stuff. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I was really involved in college. And then after I graduated, got married, had a few kids, and became a seed corn salesman. And I had a lot of fun with that. So I kind of just stopped focusing on politics. And then about a year and a half ago, I found out Huntington County, where I kind of grew up and was raised and my family's from. We farm, sell seed to farmers there. I found out that the county was going to be covering about 15,000 acres worth of solar panels. And it scared me. And so I started asking some questions. I started talking to people. And, you know, I guess this thing had been in the works for several years, 4 or 5 years. And a lot of the people that lived in the country were going to have their homes surrounded on all four sides and have a chain link fence 25 feet from the property line. And they never got a letter in the mail or notified or anything. And then we started digging and found out that, oh, we're leasing our farm ground not only to a foreign company, but it's actually the government. It's foreign governments a lot of times. So in our case, it was EDF, Electricité de France, which is 100% owned by the government of France. So long story short, got really involved local politics and commissioners meetings. And I realized I'd spent 10 years focusing on D.C. and what the president was doing in Congress. And Mike Thompson and Ryan Martin and all of us guys, we can't do nothing in D.C. But you know what? We can do a lot in our backyard. We can do a lot in our county or in the state. So anyhow, yeah, just been watching what's going on at the State House, and I've been pretty fired up. I'm a big believer that we need some stronger families and stronger towns. And as the threat of these renewables, whether it's, you know, 20,000 acres of solar panels or it's these data centers coming in, they gobble up a lot of electricity and a lot of water. There's, for instance, in neighboring Fort Wayne, Google built a data center. Fort Wayne is the second largest city in the state. There's 300,000-ish plus people. And that one Google data center takes more power than the entire city of Fort Wayne. Mm-hmm. Incredible. And Indiana is already a net importer. We don't even make enough electricity here to power the state. So now they're wanting to build a nuke plant next to it, a small modular nuclear reactor, which is pretty exciting, pretty cool. But it's going to take, you know, 10 years to build it if all goes well. And even once it's built, it'll only power 80% of that facility. And then you start asking yourself, well, they're wanting to build like 40 of these that we know about in Indiana. Where are we going to get this power? And then, oh, they take millions of gallons of water and people's wells are going dry. So I'm not against data centers. I use AI. I think it's great when used appropriately. It's definitely going to be part of the future. But we got to be careful about what we do with our farmland, what we do with our water. I don't think all of our electricity rates should, you know, quadruple in 5 years just because some foreign company wants to build a data center in your town over. So that got me excited, and that's kind of what brought me here.
So lots to unpack here. First of all, and Charlie and I have been involved in various different things through Farm Bureau in past lives. And honestly, it's interestingly enough, before I moved to Kansas back in 2001, I had actually started my campaign to be the House representative that covered Southern Whitley County, Northern Huntington County, that area there. The numbers have changed since way back when, but I actually started the campaign before I moved to Kansas. So I've been in your shoes. I'm now older and wiser and realize I want nothing to do with that. And part of it's due to the fact that, Mike, it takes so much time. And you've lived this. If you went to commissioner meetings and did all that, It's
an outstanding amount of time.
It's a huge amount. It's a full-time job to be able to even just hit all of these different things. That being said, I think it's admirable, and I definitely think it's great. We need more agriculture-backed voices to be a part of that. But, Mike, why?
Well, I'll tell you this. If you have a job that needs done, do you give it to the guy that's been watching TV all day, or do you give it to the guy that's busy as heck, but he's getting stuff done? I mean, that's the person you give it to, right? The person that's busy and they're shaking and moving. Why? I have two little kids.
Yeah, that's why I said why. You got a young family. Will you ever get to see them again?
Well, definitely. So the funny thing about politicians is they're usually not the brightest people, and they're definitely not hard workers. So I'm not saying I'm the brightest guy. I did go to Purdue, which is awesome, but that's, you know, I'm a B student. But I like to work. I don't watch TV anymore. You know, I don't have time for that. And I really care about the community I grew up in. My ancestors are buried, you know, in the local cemetery. And my kids, I hope, stay around here. But I think it's our duty to try to leave this place better than we found it. And right now, it feels like we're making a lot of decisions that are heading the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. So I think we need a strong conservative agriculture voice in Indianapolis. Unfortunately, there's, even though we're a Republican supermajority state, it doesn't always feel that way and seem like they wouldn't legislate that way.
Explain that, because I feel, I mean, there's pretty much anything the R's want done in this state.
It seems like they get it done.
It feels like they get it done, Mike.
That's you're actually absolutely right. But I'm a Republican, but that doesn't mean that every Republican is conservative and pro farmer and you know, pro liberty and limited government type of guy. So unfortunately, it seems like Indianapolis kind of works like a swamp, like DC does sometimes, where there's a lot of lobbyists, a lot of corporations that, like the IEDC is a perfect example where they've gotten a lot of money from the taxpayer. And then it basically shuffles money from the local taxpayer and your rural community, and we're giving it out like candy to these mega corporations down by Indianapolis. And, you know, it's like we've worked here and we've paid our taxes, and now we're shuffling it out of our community and we're giving it somewhere else.
But it's all in the name of business, and business is good, Mike.
I mean, business is good, but most businesses shouldn't have to live off of my tax dollars to survive, right?
Maybe.
Unless you're a farmer.
Yeah.
Well, and all this kind of comes back to the right, because I've seen a lot of the things that you see. We fought the data center up here in Kosciuszko County. I fought it quietly, you know, kind of behind the scenes, but we fought some of those things. I'm not a big believer in solar. I hate the data centers, but our guest just last week talked about the fact that, you know, the winners and losers, that cog has already moved. And so why can one farmer sell 500 acres to have this Google data center? And then all of a sudden we're like, oh, we can't have that anymore. We're losing prime farmland. And so now you're not allowed to sell. Well, now we just took away your ability to become a multi-quadrillionaire or whatever it was, while we let this guy. There's picking winners and losers, yeah, and how do we handle
that's
that,
the
Mike?
Real bear of it is, like, I don't believe, you know, the government should be picking winners and losers. And so if you say this person can lease to a data center or sell to a data center and this person can't to, you know, a solar farm, it's, well, that's the government picking winners and losers. But there's actually a bill that is just got dropped today. Okay. By a senator out of Fort Wayne, and the crux of it is right now you can put a solar farm, and I'm not against solar. If you want to put it on your backyard, your roof, power your grain system, that's great. I think it's awesome. I got solar-powered deer cameras, so it's cool technology. It's just covering thousands and thousands and thousands of acres for some of the best farm ground in the world that drives me nuts. So the bill takes it right now, the State House, and this is one of the reasons why I'm really wanting to get into Indy, is because the lobbyists for the solar farms convinced the lawmakers to pass a bill where you can put solar, industrial solar, on land that's zoned agriculture. And when they do that, they bypass a lot of the notifications that get sent to a landowner or someone that has 2 acres living in the country. And so this bill is actually going to make it where if a solar farm wants to come in, that land has to be rezoned industrial. And that means that the neighbors are now going to be notified of the process, what's going on. It also means that that land is going to be taxed at a higher rate than it would be if it was ag land.
Bingo. That's what needs to be done with these solar farms.
I think so.
The at minimum rezoning to it. That's why we have zoning laws, is to make sure that industry goes in the right spot.
Yeah, I mean, without it, you're
where the infrastructure is.
I mean, without it, you're kind of sneaking in the back door. And so this new bill is going to help with transparency, number one, which is huge, because nobody, if I go to put a junkyard out in the middle of the country, or I go to build a hog barn, right, all the neighbors within a couple miles, they're going to get certified letters saying, hey, Mike Thompson wants to build a hog barn. Here's the public meeting. Come here at this date. And, all right, people can come up and share their grievances, and maybe you can come out to an agreement, blah, blah, blah. And that's for a hog barn or a junkyard. But if you surround someone's house with 3 miles of solar farm, 3,500-acre project, whatever, they don't get notified. And that's just simply wrong. So this fixes that. So Pulaski County, Indiana, Stark County up there, Mammoth Solar, it's actually the largest solar farm in the world, I believe. It's like 13,000 continuous acres. Pulaski County has around 25,000 to 30,000 acres currently leased to these solar farms. And as a conservative, I'm not sure I can think of anything more that I would like to conserve than our rural character, what makes Indiana great. We're at the Little Red Barn podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not the Industrial Blight podcast. This is our...
Although that could be a good name, Charlie. We may have to look at...
We might have to rename it here.
There you go.
Put solar panels on a roof.
Would that be an Industrial Blight if we put it on the roof? Or do we have to just stick it in my neighbor's yard over there?
We can just... put it all around.
You won't hear any complaints out of me if it's under. Matter of fact, I'd love to have it on my roof. I penciled it out. It doesn't pencil out. So it sure as heck probably doesn't pencil out on prime farm ground. So,
and that's what I really don't understand is why aren't we seeing these solar venues pop up in Indianapolis, downtown Indianapolis, on these parking lots?
Well, I believe, again, I go back to, and this is what I've been told before, every time I bring it up, somebody goes, oh, no, that's not right. Well,
they do in Tucson, Arizona.
Because I've heard that it's the insurance lobby. The insurance lobby, because then once you stick a solar array on a roof, you know, you are increasing load of the roof. You're increasing, well, you've got wires now running through said roof. So I've heard the insurance lobby is against it because of increase in potential for loss.
Yeah.
And if losses happen, I mean, just... if it has nothing to do with the solar, but I cover the roof of this barn with solar panels, now my insurable loss is a hell of a lot higher, too. So I've heard that it's the insurance lobby that's really kind of coming against large scale, let's put solar on the roofs of everything. I've heard.
That could be part of it, but I think the really big part is the fact that you just need so much acreage to create power, right? So like one of the projects by us, it's 3,500 acres in Wells in Huntington County. It's 350 megawatt facility. And so to think 3,500 acres and rooftop, you know, that's like 1,000 Walmarts or something crazy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So the problem is just you need so many acres. And there's got to be lots of rooftops. There's lots of parking lots. Out west, there's a big old desert. You could put a lot of solar out there, and I don't think anybody would really cry about it too much.
Well, it's possible. The other thing I want to quiz you on while it's here. What are your thoughts, again, without getting too overly political, what are your thoughts on this crazy out of season redistricting effort?
Oh, the hot button issue.
Yeah,
huh?
The whole hot button issue.
Yeah.
The big red button issue on the counter.
That's
here.
Not a loaded question. yeah. So redistricting right now, the White House, right? President Trump.
And here's why I say that. Here's why I say that. I'll give you this. You're capturing your thoughts. Well, I'm a rules guy.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have a rules, if this is the way that it's supposed to happen, then you follow those rules. And the rules are you redraw, you check your maps. When the census has come out, and it's what, every 10 years, every five, is it twice every cycle? Whatever. But we have rules. Why are we trying to throw the rules out now to do something different?
Unfortunately, the worst thing about politics is the politics, right? As a country, there's been a lot of states, a lot of blue states, matter of fact, that have redistricted. And they've almost, in some cases, they've actually wiped out Republican voices entirely. So, like all of New England, Vermont, Massachusetts, up that way, there's 5-6 states where, you know, 30-40%+ of the state's Republican, and they have zero voices in Congress. It's 100%
Are you talking
blue.
30-40% of land mass or 30-40% of
votes?
Actual voters. People.
That's okay. Right. And in Illinois, for example, they've got that state so cut up. I think there's only 2 congressmen out of Illinois. They've got it so sliced and diced. So as these states, as blue states have redistricted, they've increased their Democrat share in Congress. And the only way to counterbalance that is for red states to basically do the same. In my perfect world, we would have that wouldn't be a thing, right? But we don't live in a perfect world. We live in this political world that's only seems to be getting deeper, only seems to be getting more entrenched. So as a deep red state, Indiana, barn red. Currently, there's a big push to redistrict, and right now we're at a 7-2 and to get a 9-0. And I personally, I think if Illinois and New England and California are doing this, our country's cooked. If we don't do this, if we don't follow suit, if we're not willing to play the same game that the Democrats are, then we may as well fold up shop and just say we've lost, because that's what the last 50 years we've played really nice and we've took the moral high ground, but we've lost. And I'm not here to lose. I think we need to win to try to save what's left of the country so our kids have a chance.
But the game's dirty.
Welcome to politics.
I guess that's what my whole point is, going back when I asked you the why. Because, Mike, you seem like a nice guy. Why dive into some of this stuff and be forced to play a dirty game?
Oh, that's a good question. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I just want to be left alone. If I can,
Wait a minute. That sounds libertarian, Mike.
I told you I was with Young Americans for Liberty, right, back in college. And I worked on Rand Paul's campaign, took a month off, went to Iowa. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very, you know, grounded in liberty and libertarianism, constitutionalism, but, you know, I'm a Republican, just kind of that liberty wing. Mm-hmm. And I just want to be left alone. You know, I want to mow my roadsides. I want to pick up my rocks. I want to be able to shoot my guns in the backyard and, you know, out in the country and not be bothered with. But the reality is that everything in today's world is political. Everything's taxed like crazy. Everything's regulated. Everything's, if it's not regulated, it's subsidized and tax abatement. And this guy over here is getting money and, you can't do this because of this, and what should be zoned industrial is not zoned industrial. And it, you know, power utility rates. I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen what it just costs just to pay your electrical bill every month. It's going crazy the last couple of years, and it's only going to get worse. So this is real life things that are affecting everybody. And as a father of two young kids, we've got to get it together. And so I was following Charlie Kirk. When I was with Young Americans for Liberty, I set my table up at Purdue right next to some of the Turning Point people. And what was it, September 10th, I believe it was, is when he got assassinated. And that disturbed me for several days. It still does. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got two little kids, wife. At that point, it was like, we've got to do something. Our country it's in a death spiral. You know, they shot Trump in the head, you know, before that. So we can either sit back, we can bury our head in the sand, we can just kind of live our life hunky dory while the whole town around us is on fire, falling apart. Or we can say, you know what? I'm a citizen and I don't really want to be in politics, but maybe that's what we need. And so I'm going to go for it. I've got a good team around me. We've got a lot of energy. Grant County, Huntington County, Wabash County is the district. I'm pretty excited. Both my parents and grandparents are from Grant County, and I work in Wabash, and I live in Huntington. I've got a good group all around. So we're excited. We got a good team, and I think it's time that we get a citizen in politics.
So in a perfect world, I mean, you've highlighted and you've talked a lot about, we started talking for the first 20, 30 minutes about the seed companies and all sorts of things like that. So you're rooted in agriculture. There's not a lot of ag guys in politics.
They're a lot smarter than me.
There's not a lot in Indiana. There's not a lot nationally. Why should the farmer care about this stuff? And why would you encourage more farmers to try and get involved on their local level? I can't get to Area Plan Commission, BZA, County Commissioners, County Council. I can't hit all of them. Why should farmers want to be involved?
Who's invested the most as far as paying property taxes in a rural county? Right. A lot of times it's the farmer. It's the landowner. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the ones that are footing the bill for our public schools and for the sheriff's department and for, you know, all these things. And so we need to be not only good stewards of the land, we got to be good stewards of our tax dollars. And if you're a person that's spending the dollars, but maybe it's not coming out of your pocket, or maybe very little is coming out of your pocket, you might be a little more apt to spend more dollars. But if you're the one that's writing the check, I mean, I know I work with hundreds of farmers, and they're some of the squeakiest, tightest people, you know, we're frugal. I got a guy that wears bibs, and he's got a bolt holding the bib together. He's so cheap. He squeaks when he walks.
Sure that's not my dad?
Yeah, well, exactly. He's got one too, huh? Yeah. Yeah, see, exactly. He needs to get involved in his local politics. Yeah.
Yeah. Both my parents have gotten involved with the Farm Bureau organization more because of just what you said. They want to be a voice and go out there and connect with the politicians and say, hey, this is what's going on.
I think part of it, though, too, is a lot of times we tend to look at our world and what's going on around us in our world through our eyes. And this became very clear to me when, you know, folks really started to get up in arms about the data center potentially going in at Clunet up here. Everybody's first was, well, I don't want that here. It's going to ruin my view. I don't want that here. Blah, 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 blah. And folks generally tend to look at things through that kind of lens. And Mike, you'd say it if I didn't. At the end of the day, an argument for why something is a bad idea isn't how it affects me. It has nothing to do with how it affects me. Yeah, I don't want to look out and see a quad barn right next to me stinking everything up, but it doesn't matter what I want. And we don't, and I think farmers think about that a lot, because what do farmers want? They want exactly what they want to be left alone. They don't want anybody to come in and tell them how to do anything. Well, if I want to be left alone, I surely shouldn't put my nose out here and put my two cents in and tell everybody else how they should do things, because I just want to be left alone. I think there's a lot of that. Looking at everything through our own eyes rather than looking at it through a larger picture, and even like a chessboard. I think politics needs to be looked at as a chessboard.
It's a game.
It's not necessarily what this move is going to do. You got to think what this move is going to cascade to all the way down the line.
Who wants to live in the country and be treated like it's an HOA, like you're in a subdivision, right? Yeah. You can't do this, can't do that, got to do this, got to pay this due. Nobody wants that.
Right.
As a guy that's, you know, it's pro property rights and that, you know, I thought about this when it came to the solar stuff. But the reality is that they're using your property to fund the thing via tax dollars, because it's not viable unless it's heavily subsidized. And the other thing was, like you talked about, Charlie, is the zoning. If it's going to be industrial project, it ought to be zoned industrial. And if you believe in 100% property rights, then we shouldn't have any sort of zoning laws. We can get away with that. And most people go, you know, maybe we don't want a strip club right next to the public school. Maybe that's a bad idea. There's certain values that we have. And if you're in the agriculture community, if you're out in the country, you want to, you know, if you see a hog barn, you may not like it, but you know what? You decide to live in the country. So you're probably going to see some tractors on the road. You're probably going to see some livestock. You're probably going to see some crops. But you're not expecting to see this 3,500-acre industrial energy facility.
Ooh, that sounds like a good idea. Let's put a hog barn up on the west side of the lake.
There you go.
I like this idea. Yeah. For all the trouble that they caused me, we'll just put up a couple
of
quads.
Now, you see, you're being revengeful, Charlie. You cannot revengeful. Yeah. Mike, kind of a more general question. How much of the whole political chaos that we have, the dirtiness and the way it is, how much of that is just a primer or a reflection of how we are as a society? How much of this is a societal problem versus a political problem?
That's a good question. I was actually talking to a farmer this morning, and he was just going on and on about how social media has been really, really devastating.
That's the root of all evil.
Think about it. Like back in the
especially those podcasts.
Exactly. Those are awful.
Yeah. All them dirty, nasty comments coming at you. Like, ouch, man. I'm doing this for free. Just having some fun. you don't even be nasty. But back in the day, if somebody said something, you know, maybe it was rude, you might have to sit next to them in a church pew, or might have to see them at the restaurant. And now behind a keyboard, people can say some pretty, pretty nasty stuff. And we get siloed. We all want to surround ourselves with people that think like us, because we feel comfortable with doing that. And so when you build these silos and you have kind of your tribe versus their tribe, you get pretty entrenched in your views, and then you start to view that other tribe as kind of the enemy tribe, and it just seems like we're kind of just pulling apart. And so I miss the days, you know, you talk about like my parents' generation or grandparents' generation where, you know, they went to the factory and one guy was Republican, one was a Democrat, and they might throw a few jabs at each other. But then after work, they'd go to the restaurant and go grab a drink or whatever together, and they got along just fine. But unfortunately, it seems like in today's world, that's getting, you know, families are not talking to each other if one person says or thinks the wrong thing. And that's not right, and it's not healthy.
And that's the problem is that's society, and I'm not sure how we fix that. And ultimately, while the goal is robust and fantastic, and I wish you well, and I hope that you do well, and I hope there's others that follow and do the same thing, Charlie, I'm worried that society is going to make it so it's, I don't want to say all for naught, but we got some problems. If families are pulling apart.
Well, that's so one of the thesis in my, one of the things in my campaign is we need strong families and strong towns.
Okay.
And over the last, right, my grandparents' generation, you know, if you were born early 1900s, you know, 10s, 20s, 30s, 40s, that was some of the best generation that's ever lived. And since then, we've kind of lived in excess. We've been a little fat, a little happy, and I'm I like to eat, and I sit and drive all day, talk to farmers, and we eat. So I'm guilty of that. But I think it'd be good if we started building, you know, and we focused on what's, you know, what does a strong town look like? What does a strong family look like? You know, a lot of the public schools, a lot of the schools in my area, you know, there's stories of a 23-person class, and every one of those kids comes from a broken home, and that's got a lot of effects. That dominoes, it gets, you know, extrapolated. Back in the day, you had the nuclear family where you had, you know, 2, 3, 4 kids, 5 kids, whatever, and you had your mom and dad, and there were a few, you know, divorces and whatnot, but for the most part, they stayed together. And then you also had, beyond the nuclear family, you had aunts, uncles, grandparents, and now there's a lot of, my wife's a teacher, now she's a counselor, she taught for 10 years, and the amount of, you know, kids out there that just don't have that family to rely on. It breaks my heart. But I'm actually, there's a lot to be nervous about, a lot to be concerned about, but I'm hopeful. The Gen Z, you know, this younger generation, they're starting to come around. They're actually, it's I think the first time in like 100 years that the next generation is actually going to church more than the generation before it, which is pretty cool. And I like to say the quote, good times make weak men.
Mm-hmm.
Weak men make hard times. Hard times make strong men, and those strong men make good times. And right now, it feels like we're on that circle, and we're at the point where we're heading. You know, we're kind of in some tough times, and I'm hoping that this younger generation is kind of going to go, man, maybe my ancestors, maybe they weren't so dumb after all. Maybe there was a lot of wisdom in what they believed, and I think we can pull this ship up. You know, we can pull on the yoke, and we can save ourselves. At least I'm going to try, and I'm hoping to inspire some others. Maybe I can get you to throw your hat back in the ring someday.
So if I'm hearing you right, though, you basically hit on what my question was, which if it's a societal problem, you're banking on society fixing itself through this upcoming generation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good luck.
Charlie said it. I didn't. I was going to sit. You know,
it starts at home. See. I mean, it starts with your family. Yeah. It starts in your community. I mean, yeah. I'm a small town guy. Grew up in a tiny town, 1,000 people, and I think it's pretty powerful. You know, pretty cool. You go back through town and you see 6 people on the road when you drive through, and you go to the diner and you see a bunch of people you know you're related to. And I think a lot of this younger generation is kind of longing for that. You know, we've been so separated and distant. I think everyone's kind of ready to get back into that.
You know, there. I think about what you're talking about here, and I think you have a lot of good viewpoints with that. Sometimes I think it takes the bigger person to reach their hand out and say, hey, I know you disagree with me, but let's make a better place. But on the same hand, they go like, you got to be careful who you're reaching out to because it could be that person that stabbed you in the back 5 times beforehand,
yeah.
too. And where we're farming around a lake, we get a lot of that from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
People coming in and telling me how to farm. And I'm like, that's quite interesting. Let's talk biochemistry. And they're like, what? I go, yeah, I use biochemistry on my farm. What do you use? On your front yard.
Mm-hmm.
Then the conversation takes a whole different tone when you talk science.
If we would all walk a mile in someone else's shoes, the world would be a heck of a lot better place.
Yep. But they do appreciate me when I'm pulling them out of the field. on these snowy roads. So
yeah,
and they're probably gonna come back and tell you how to do it when you're driving out there with these combines here in another week or two, and burying them up into the mud.
Well, that's why we have tracks.
Yeah. Well, you're gonna need them. You're gonna need them as we kind of circle back around to finish on the on the weather and ag talk here.
Oh boy!
You texted me no less than 24 hours after the first wave of snow hit, that first 8 to 10 inches. Mm-hmm. And you asked me this question. You asked me, "How long is this going to sit on the ground?" I told you for a good long time, because we're not going to get above freezing for at least 2 weeks, and we're in the middle of that pattern right now. But I'll tell you what, we hit mid-month December. Mother Nature is going to show her bipolarness. You think politicians are bipolar, Mr. Thompson.
Hey, Mother Nature. I'm just a farmer right now. We'll see what happens.
If you think that's the case, Mother Nature is going to throw you a big bone here. I'm looking, Charlie, for us to warm up dramatically that week of the 15th, 16th, 17th. All the snow that sat here for forever, it's going to melt. We're going to get some rain on top of that. It's going to be a muddy mess just about the time that you – of course, you're going to go out and try and get this stuff while there's snow still on the ground, aren't you?
I would never say that.
Your combines in your shop right now would say something different, wouldn't they?
You're right, because they are full of snow.
They are packed full of snow. But if you don't, I mean, you're going to be dealing with a hell of a lot of mud, the way it looks to me. And then Mother Nature going to go back the other way, I think, the week of Christmas. Which, by the way, Mike, you ready for Christmas? You got all your shopping done already, right?
That's what good politicians do. I learned my lesson on year one of marriage to not go Christmas shopping on Christmas Eve at Walmart. Yeah. So, yeah, we're getting better.
You're good. How about you? You're still playing the ski pass game, aren't you?
We're going ski passes.
You're cheating.
Yeah, we're cheating. Yeah. But you know what? When Tractor Supply had their blowout clearance sale before Black Friday. We made some.
Oh, he's not asleep. You can't say it out loud. Okay. He's not asleep
yet. We'll stop right now.
I thought he was asleep. He's not asleep.
Oh, now he's putting his earbuds. We went shopping for mom.
There you go. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So anyway, the week of Christmas, we could flash freeze all of this. I think it gets cold real again ahead of Christmas. And so we're going to go up and down quite a bit here. You've got 400-ish acres to go. I know there's a guy north of Fort Wayne that's got a chunk that needs to go yet. There's a lot of corn still up in that northern Indiana area. There's some need out there. The guy in Fort Wayne could use a couple extra trucks. So there's some need. This is where you can help your neighbor, all of that. If you want more information, you want to put a truck someplace in the field, I'll get you hooked up with my guy. But it's going to be an interesting ride here through the middle of December.
And that's what I'm really anticipating. What I'm looking at, we were driving down the road with my mother, and she goes, "Well, when are you going to get back in the fields?" I go, "As soon as I see the snow's off those trees, and off, that means it's going to be off the ears, we can go."
Yeah. So you're looking more at, you don't care how much, there could still be 10 inches of snow that goes under these tracks. All you got to do is get the ear in the clear.
Right. As soon as I get my ear in the clear and snow off of that where we can start processing things, the plant through the machine, we're going.
That's a campaign slogan. Mike Thompson, 2026. He's got his ears in the clear.
Yeah, there we go.
I love it.
I think we do. Yard signs are coming. Ears in the clear. Mike, any parting words here, ag or otherwise? I mean, was this what you expected?
This is way better than I expected.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's my parting words. I think we just all need to get a little more involved in what's going on in our backyard, politically or whatever. I mean, if politics isn't your thing, there's other things you can, you know, I'm not, just because you're interested in politics and helping doesn't mean you got to run for office, but you should probably figure out who is your commissioner, who is county council, what's going on, right? Where's the money going? What's the need? And things like that. I didn't know what a commissioner was, you know, several years ago until I started getting involved here. And it's actually quite interesting to follow along and see what all happens. There's way more going on in your local town or your county you ever would have imagined. Yeah. And there's actually a lot of good things going on, right? A lot of times people sometimes focus on the bad. There's a lot of cool stuff happening. So check it out. Get involved. I mean, at the end of the day, we've got to try to leave this place as a farmer. You leave your ground better than the way you found it. And so we've got to try to leave our community better than we found it.
Well, and on that note, I want to give a couple of things that we're going to be looking at talking about in your head. Charlie, have you heard about the residual fertility tax exemption?
No.
No, we're going to talk about that. We're going to try and get somebody in here on the tax side. There is a thought process now that the residual fertilizer that is in the ground can be a tax-exempt or a depreciable asset just like tile, which blew me away when I read that. I want to know more information on that. So leaving the ground better than we found it, you might even be able to get a tax exemption for that. So who knows? We're going to look into that. We're going to look into several other things, but that's the one I just wanted to whet your appetite, Charlie, so you can do your homework about how much residual fertilizer and fertility that you have in your soil that you're going to take to your accountant next year and say, give me money.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's very interesting.
We're going to call it the manganese credit for you because I know you have.
Here we go.
Keep in mind, folks, this podcast, once again, brought to you by Mac America Ag Finance of Northern Indiana. Mac America can get you hooked up on an express application for real estate and or infrastructure financing up to $3 million on 48 hours. You can get a approval. I can't get you the money in 48 hours, they say, but they can get you the approval. Mac America Northern Indiana office, 574-253-3433. Give them a call. They'll get you set up. Mike, thanks for swinging by.
Glad to be here. Enjoyed it.
You got my sign for me, right?
I got one for you.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
Big sign. Charlie, thanks for coming by. Matthew, you made it through the whole thing awake. And you're just still grinning and giggling and did not have a single jelly bean. We'll stick some in your pocket for the way home. Until then, guys, the next episode drops in 1 week. We'll see you then. This is the Little Red Barn.